his neck, grimacing. Are you tired of this yet, Argento? I don't know what you mean. And the lies just keep on coming. Alex huffs miserably down his nose. Okay, well, real talk. I don't like girls very often. I don't normally spend my days pissed at myself because I can't stop myself from thinking about someone. I can safely say I have never truly, really given a shit about anyone apart from my kid brother before. I don't know if that's a good thing to be admitting. Just stop. Quit hiding from the hard stuff. I'm not fucking hiding from it. Not anymore. If you can't just be real for 1 second, then I'll do it for the both of us. My life is a fucking mess right now. I have so much shit going on, and I've been trying my best to forget that you even exist. But I can't, okay? I like you. I care about you. I care that you probably think I hooked up with one of those dumb bitches at that party when I didn't, when I walked away disgusted at how pathetic they were being. And I know you don't want to hear any of this shit. Your life is fucked up too. But I see you, Silver. I see you looking at me, and I can feel the want in you. This playing around, tiptoeing around the truth is just fucking, it's fucking pointless. You like me too. You care about me too. You don't know why yet, but I can show you. I'm a risk. I'm a danger. I'm not a fucking safe bet by anyone's standards. But I can be good for you if you let me. At least I think I can. You're the first fucking person in this entire world who's ever made me want to fucking try. And he's run out of steam, the muscles ticking in his jaw again. He's trying to rein in the fire that seems to have caught in him, and he's having a rough time doing it. Meanwhile, I'm having a hard time standing still, hearing the words that he's saying. This is not easy for me. It's been a long time since I've been spoken to like this. Someone telling me the truth, on a base level, and looking to me to reciprocate. I open my mouth, and Alex stills. His eyes are slightly narrowed, his nostrils flared, hands formed into the shape of fists at his sides. He's waiting for me to deny everything he's just said, to sweep it all aside, and he's ready and waiting for it. He's not going to let me get off lightly. I do like you, I say softly. I shouldn't. I'm just... It doesn't matter if I like you, Alex. I can lie in bed and think about you all I want. I can watch you, and I can imagine... Shit, this is too hard. I can't even find the words. His chest is rising and falling rapidly, the tendons straining in his neck. What do you imagine? Alex, please. You're not a fucking coward, Silver. I know you're not. You prove that every day that you show up at that school. What do you imagine? I take a deep breath. Everything is such a mess. I close my eyes and take a deep breath. Kissing you, I whisper. Your mouth on mine, your hands on me, laying my head on your chest, listening to your heartbeat. A harsh, pained sound escapes him. Silver. I imagine us being together. I imagine having you to myself, that you are mine. It's so easy to picture walking down the hallway at Raleigh with your hand in mine, because I know it would be easy. It would be so much fucking better because I wouldn't be alone anymore. I could fall in love with you, Alex. I could see myself doing that. I nod, trying not to stumble over the terrifying words. It wouldn't take much, but I can't let it happen. Alex is as rigid as the statue of David. He looks struck dumb by what I've just said. I wonder if I've gone too far, been too honest, said too much. Guys Alex's age don't talk about falling in love. They say you're seeing each other, or talking, to avoid even calling you their girlfriend. But he takes a slow, cautious step forward, heat radiating off him like a furnace. Why not? He asks. I'm not good enough. No, of course not. God, Alex, I want you. I want all of those things. I want you to touch me. I want you to kiss me more than I ever wanted anything. Then just give in, Silver. Stop fucking fighting so hard.
I'm not fighting.
Yes, you are. You have been since the moment we met. Before we even met. He huffs down his nose. fight the hard stuff, the wrong stuff, but stop fighting me. I'm neither of those things. Just trust me. I'm so close to tears. I don't know how, Alex. If I so much as breathe right now, I'm going to fall to pieces, and I desperately don't want that. He steps into me. A frigid breeze whips through the clearing between the cabin and the lake, and his wavy, dark hair blows across his face. It swirls around his head as the wind eddies, and I'm struck for the millionth time that he can't possibly be real. This dark, tortured soul, covered in so much ink, standing before me, isn't the kind of creature to find his way into my life and somehow make it better. He was meant for other things. A wolf and a rose, savage and wild, beautiful and tender. A dichotomy if I ever saw one. I realize for the very first time that the ink on the backs of Alex's hands really are an accurate representation of him. I stare at them as he slowly lifts his hand, and then he's carefully stroking his thumbs over my cheekbones, cradling my face so reverently that I think he's worried I might shatter against him. His voice is filled with emotion as he sighs out his next words.
I promise, you won't even need to try, Argento. I'll make it as easy as breathing.
He moves with infinite patience, slowly, giving me every opportunity to bolt. Somehow, despite my heart fluttering in my chest like an injured bird, I stay rooted to the ground, my feet bare in the earth, as he bows down to meet me, lifting my face to him. And he kisses me. I've been kissed before, but not like this. Not like it means something. Not like it really is a promise. It starts slow, tentative, gentle, but I can feel the unrest in him. I know he wants to claim me with his mouth, but he holds back. He's patient with me, and I begin to feel the fractured pieces inside me slowly starting to hurt a little less. His fingers thread into my hair as he slowly guides my mouth open. The moment the wet heat of his tongue touches my lips, something is kindled in me. The beginnings of a fire I already know will burn out of control if given half a chance. I'm hot all over, eaten alive by both fear and need as he pulls me to him, firmly holding me against his chest. The taste of him fills my head, cool and fresh like mint. I surprise myself when I reach up and place my hand at the back of his neck, pulling down so he can kiss me harder. Maybe I'm proving something to myself now, meeting him in the middle, daring to slide my tongue into his mouth too. I can do this. I want it more than anything I've ever wanted before. I fit against him, so much smaller than him, like a piece of a puzzle falling into place. And in one blindingly quick moment, I begin to believe in this. In him. In us. That there can be an us, without the fear that's been festering in me like a poison ruining everything in the span between heartbeats. I didn't know it, but I've been waiting for him for a long time now. When he pulls away, breath ragged, eyes wide, his pupils are blown, turning his irises almost black.
That's it then, Argento. The decision's been made. You're mine, and I'm yours. And the whole of Raleigh High is going to know about it by 8:05 Tuesday morning.
18. Alex.
Wake up, Passerotto. I made you something good. Alessandro, mi amore, open your eyes.
The smell of caramelized sugar and the sound of my mother's voice wakes me. For a drowsy, blissful moment, I am 6 years old, and my mother is stroking a feather along the bridge of my nose, making me squirm as I surface from my dreams. She used to do that all the time, even though she knew it made me mad and tickled like crazy. I rub at my face, scratching my nose, eyes opening slowly, and I see the full-bloomed roses, wrapped in vines, winding up my arm, and it comes flooding back. 11 years rushing in, pressing down on me, replaying the greatest hits of my life, which up until last night haven't been all that fucking great. I wasn't paying much attention to the cabin last night when Silver showed me into a small bedroom on the ground floor, complete with bunk beds and Hulk sheets. Max's room, she told me. Turns out her brother is the same age as Ben. Now I get up, kicking my way back into my jeans and sliding my arms into my t-shirt, noticing that this morning is the first morning in a long-ass time that I haven't woken up with a stiff neck on the couch in the trailer. There is a bedroom there. I could use the bed, but somehow climbing into it feels wrong. 3 years, I slept on a 2-inch thick mattress in Gary's converted basement. He made a point of making sure I wouldn't be comfortable, and so I made a point of getting accustomed to the cold and the ache in my bones when I woke, as a fuck you to the bastard. Now that I have no reason to mistreat my body and subject it to such uncomfortable conditions, I don't know. It's hard to stop saying fuck you to Gary, even though the motherfucker's dead. From the way the sun's pouring in through the windows, already climbed halfway up into the sky, it must be about 11 or so. Everything looks so different in the daylight. I wander down a narrow hallway, emerging into the living room, and I catch sight of Silver through the doorway, standing in the kitchen in front of the stove, stirring viciously at something. She hasn't noticed me yet, and I take a moment to watch her. Her hair's down. I have never, ever seen it down before. The light catches at it, highlighting individual strands of honey and gold, and I remember how good it had felt to bury my hands in the thickness of it last night. Too fucking good. She's wearing little blue shorts with ribbons tied into bows on either side of the legs, and a white t-shirt that's so big it's slipping off her, exposing one of her shoulders. She hums as she cooks, and I recognize the song. It's Vienna by Billy Joel. So fucking weird. Weird that she even knows it. I don't want to startle her, so I clear my throat, walking heavily across the living room, making sure she knows I'm coming. She pauses for a second, but then carries on with her stirring, whisking at something in a pan. God, she's something else. I can't bear how fucking beautiful she is. It cuts me down to the quick. I don't even hide the fact that I'm staring at her. I'm never going to hide that she fascinates me, not ever again. Good morning. I can hear the amusement in my tone as I prop myself up against the kitchen's door jamb. Stands to reason, since I'm highly entertained by the way today has started out. The two of us, together, in the middle of nowhere, alone. Feels fucking strange. Aside from last night, we've never been alone like this. There have always been plenty of people within shouting distance. Other students, a teacher, Silver's father. Here there's only me, only her. She takes her sweet time turning around, and I can barely wait to see her face. God, I'm turning into such a fucking lovesick asshole puppy. I'm almost making myself sick. If Monty could hear me now, he'd drive his hand between my fucking legs, grab hard and squeeze just to make sure my balls were still hanging there. She's not wearing any makeup. Her eyes are bright and filled with nervousness, but the reckless grin she fires at me tells me that she's not going to kneel to her own apprehension today.
I'm making French toast and crème anglaise, she informs me, though you're probably a bacon and eggs guy. Scratch that, you probably down a quart of engine grease for breakfast, don't you?
I smile, scrubbing a hand through my hair, trying to make it lie flat. I know it won't, it never does, but it's worth a shot. From the crooked smile and the hiked-up eyebrows, Silver's not too sure about my crazy bedhead look. She prods a whisk in my direction.
You can eat, but then you need to leave. My parents will flip if they find a guy up here.
I try not to notice the fact that she isn't wearing a bra and her nipples are peaked beneath the material of her shirt, but I am a guy, so that's basically impossible. My poker face is unrivaled, though. Fair enough. I tell her. She looks deflated.
Fair enough?
Yeah. I plan on claiming most of your spare time, Silver. I don't want your parents ready to run me through with a pitchfork on day one.
I thought you might put up a bit of a fight.
I give her a devilish smirk. It's fucked up how easy it is to change gear on her. Stalking into the kitchen, I approach her, keeping my thoughts from my face. Still, I'm cautious as I place my hands on her hips. You want me to put up a fight? You got it. I'm not going anywhere. I'm staying right here with you until Monday night, and when we go back to Raleigh, I'm going to kidnap you and have you sleep at my place. I'm keeping you for myself, Silver. I'm never letting you out of my fucking sight. Don't bother arguing. You'll only be wasting your breath. She stares up at me with unfocused eyes, her lips slightly parted. Neither of us has commented on the fact that the whisk she's still holding in her hand is dripping some kind of yellow liquid onto the cracked linoleum floor.
Okay, she says on an exhale. Fine.
It's my turn to repeat her. Fine? A quick nod.
Sure. I mean,
she shrugs.
What my parents don't know won't kill them. And my dad liked you for some reason, even though you showed up at the house uninvited.
Slowly I lean down and kiss her. It's the lightest kind of kiss, the barest suggestion of one. Our lips hardly making contact, but it seems to have a wild effect on Silver. Her eyes dance, alive and feverish. Seems I have a bad habit of showing up uninvited, I say.
Are you handling me like a China doll now?
She asks.
You can kiss me properly. I won't break because of a kiss.
I run the tip of my index finger lightly over her forehead, down the bridge of her nose, over the biteable swell of her lips, and then trail all the way underneath her chin and down the slope of her neck until I reach her collarbone. I've wanted to touch her so many fucking times in abstract, weird ways like this. She stands still, patient, maybe a little tense, as I stroke the pad of my finger into the small hollow at the base of her neck. I pull my hand away. There are people out there who poison themselves on purpose, I tell her. Small doses, every day. She's quick, doesn't need me to explain how this piece of information is relevant to our situation.
You think I'm going to build up a tolerance to you if you feed me small sips of you? You're not poison.
I nod, wetting my bottom lip, my eyes roving hungrily over her face. Yes, I am poison. And yeah, I'm a staunch advocate for too much too quick. That's always been my MO, but I'm willing to develop an iron will and patience to make sure I don't fuck this up. She crooks an eyebrow at me, and I mirror her expression, making her smile. Fuck me dead. I made her smile. This is the first time I've made her anything other than angry. And the rush of emotion, seeing her turn that smile on me like I fucking deserve it or something, feels like a kick to the gut. God, how am I ever going to be worthy of this girl? I have no clue, but I'm going to figure it out if it kills me.
I had a dream,
she says quietly. It's a shy admission, which looks damn cute on her.
I dreamed we were somewhere warm, together. In the sun.
I'm sorry, son. I have no idea what you're talking about.
Ha ha, she says dryly. I think it was Hawaii. We were swimming in the ocean, and all of your tattoos washed off in the water.
There's a weird tightness in my chest. I don't know if it's because she dreamed such a strange thing, or because she dreamed of me, period. I mostly only feature in other people's nightmares. Is that your subtle way of telling me you want me to go through 100 laborious, incredibly painful hours of tattoo removal, Dolcezza? She rolls her eyes.
I'm not finished. I dreamed they all came off in the water, but then they transferred onto me, and they were all in the wrong places.
I tug my bottom lip through my teeth, holding my hands over Silver's face, covering her eyes. I'm not sure a bunch of face tattoos would suit you. She bites back a coy smile as she takes hold of me by the wrists, the beaters smearing yellow batter up my arm, and pulls my hands away. She starts. Seems like she can't finish, though.
You what? I've wondered about the rest of them. Your tattoos? How many do you have? Do they all mean something to you? Where are they?
She trails off. Twin patches of red staining her cheeks. She's fucking ridiculously adorable when she's embarrassed. Leaning into her, unable to resist the chance to make that blush spread a little further, I brush my mouth lightly against hers again. Are you asking for a guided tour of my body, Silver Parisi? B? because I will happily oblige. The change in her body is very noticeable. Her back straightens, her hands tightening around my wrists. Great job, asshole. You freaked her out. I'm only teasing, I say quietly, nudging the end of her nose with my own. I'm not suggesting we get naked and run around the cabin like animals. Her eyes are like mirrors when she looks up at me, pale blue, almost silver.
I'm not upset. I would like the guided tour, so long as the rides are optional.
She seems pretty pleased with her euphemism. Oh, so you're a dork. Good to know. I grab the beater from her and toss it underhand into the sink behind her, pulling her closer to me. Our bodies are pressed up against each other, and I spend all of a heartbeat trying to figure out if I should try and angle myself in a way that might hide the fact that I have a raging hard-on. But I run out of time. Silver feels it. She has to. It's digging into her fucking hip like a reinforced steel baton. I expect her to flip out, at least get a little weird. But she doesn't. Instead, she gives me a slightly scandalized, open-mouth smile, coolly arching an eyebrow at me.
If I'm a dork, then you must get turned on by some pretty weird stuff, she says breezily.
You don't know the half of it. I gather her hair in my hands, reveling in the weight and the feel of it as I brush it back over her shoulders and I expose her bare neck. There is a line in the sand where physical contact with Silver is concerned. I made it myself, so I know how far to go and when to pull back. Kissing her neck is definitely not on the right side of the line, but I allow myself one slow, careful graze of my lips against the porcelain column of her throat. Just one, and it's enough. The identical flushed patches of red on Silver's cheeks have grown, but I don't think they're caused by embarrassment anymore. I'll show you my tattoos, and you can grade every single one of them, I tell her. But I think we're gonna have to hit up that diner I noticed on the way up here to grab some more food dolcezza. She frowns at me. I don't know if she's noticed, but her hands have found their way to my chest, palms resting familiarly against my pecs, and the contact is making me want to fucking sing. She cants her head to one side and asks,
Why?
Because the French toast you were making is on fire, I reply. She nearly jumps a foot in the air as she spins around, rushing over to the stove, swearing loudly like a sailor.
Fuck! Shit! Fuck! Shit! Fuck! Shit! Fuck! Shit! 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 No!
She turns the burner off, shoving the frying pan off the ring, and then proceeds to bat at the flaming, blackened pieces of French toast with a kitchen towel. Not really a good idea. I intervene, physically picking her up by the waist and setting her down by the kitchen table. Then I take the towel from her and use it to pick the pan up by the handle. The whole thing goes in the sink. I turn on the tap, blasting the contents of the pan with water, and the mini fire immediately gutters out. Silver stands next to me in front of the sink, regarding her destroyed attempt at breakfast with morose resignation.
Probably for the best, she says. I'm a horrible cook. I'm sure you'd have been the one that ended up poisoned if you'd eaten that.
19. Silver. I pinch myself repeatedly while Alex is in the shower, hard enough to bruise. This doesn't feel like real life. I can't bend my head around the fact that he's here, with me, at the cabin, and we're actually doing this. I'm letting him in for fuck's sake, and he, God, for some unknown reason, he actually wants to be here with me. By the time we get to the cafe on the other side of the lake, the heat blasting on full inside Alex's Camaro, we've missed breakfast and have to make do with lunch. People halt their conversations. Forks freezing halfway between their plates and their mouths as Alex and I make our way to a booth. No one really comes up here in October, and the cafe crowd today are mostly locals. They're not used to someone like Alex showing up in the middle of their BLTs and their gossip sessions. We both order a sandwich each and two coffees. The waitress, Layla, who I've known since I was 8, shoots me a wide-eyed look as she scribbles in her notepad. I think she's trying to signal me in Morse code with her furious blinking.
Do you need help? I laugh, shrugging at her, and Alex reaches across the table and takes my hand. Such a normal, everyday thing that people do, and yet it feels monumental to me. Alex's smile is tight when I look at him, though. I kick him gently under the table. What's the deal?
I know you're tough as old boots, but you sure you can handle this?
He dodges the balled-up napkin I throw at him in response to the boots comment. What, people noticing that you're a bad boy heartbreaker? He pulls a face.
It doesn't bother me, people looking. Never has. But it might end up bothering you if you can't even go out to grab some food without feeling 18 sets of eyes lasering into your back.
Layla brings our coffees. I take a sip, watching, a little horrified, as Alec dumps 4 packets of sugar into his mug. I think you've forgotten who you're talking to. I'm stared at way more than you are every day at school. No one thinks twice about your ink there. Well, actually, they do. They probably think it's hot. Me, on the other hand, being a lying whore who tries to ruin Raleigh royalty, is not hot. Alex's expression turns stormy. He looks out of the cafe window, out onto the lake, deep lines furrowing his brow.
Don't say that.
I shrug. It's just the truth.
You're not a lying whore.
It doesn't matter whether I am or I'm not, though, right? People believe what they want to believe. They believe what everyone else believes because they're too scared to stand apart from the crowd. In the end, I am whatever they say I am, Alex. He picks up the salt shaker, his hand closing around it into a fist, still staring out of the window.
I'm gonna need to know exactly what happened that night, he says in a monotone voice.
My ears are suddenly on fire. I want to shrink back into the seat, or under it, or just fucking run away. I do my best to keep my voice steady when I say, I thought you believed me. His head whips around, eyes bearing down on me, full of wild energy.
I didn't mean it like that. I'm not trying to fact check.
Shame spirals through me.
Don't be such a fucking tease, Silver. Show us that pretty little cunt. Come on, princess. That's right. Open your mouth. Wider. Wider, stupid bitch. Do you want to die for the sake of a quick fuck?
I jolt at the memory of the hand cracking against my cheek. Alex's eyes widen at the sudden movement. I can't bear the look on his face, so I avert my gaze, staring down at the peeling laminated menu that's tucked behind the condiment bottles. Why then? What's the point in rehashing it all? It's all over and done with now. It doesn't matter. For a second, Alex doesn't say anything. When I risk a sidelong glance at him, he's running his thumb along the edge of his steak knife, pressing so hard his skin has bleached white. A small, crimson bead of blood drips down onto the table.
It matters, he says flatly. I'm gonna need to know who I have to hurt first, aren't I?
Don't be stupid, Alex. You're not going to do anything to any of them. He puts the steak knife down and quickly wipes away the blood from the table as Layla approaches with our food. Once she's gone, I repeat myself, needing him to hear me. Those guys are untouchable. Their families own the school. They own the whole town. Hell, they even own the cops. If you fuck with them, they'll be held to pay, and it won't be any of them settling the bill. Believe me.
I believe you, but I still want you to tell me. Do you think?
He knows he's asking something really hard. He looks like he hates that he's asking it of me.
Do you think you could do it?
I don't know. What's the worst, most awful, brutal thing that's ever happened to you? You think you could tell me all about it in great detail? I'm not being sarcastic. I genuinely want to know. He gives me a hard look, jaw set, and then nods, just the once.
My mother killed herself when I was 6. I came home from school. It was a Thursday, so I only had a half day. The kitchen smelled strange, and it made me lightheaded to breathe. I didn't know it then, but the gas burner was still on. If I'd turned on a light, I would have blown the whole fucking place sky high.
I reach across the table, placing my hand over his. Alex, I didn't mean right now. He shrugs one shoulder, quirking his mouth up at one side, too.
Ben was only 9 months old. He was in the living room naked with a cut on his arm, was screaming at the top of his lungs. I knew something wasn't right, so I went from room to room looking for my mom. I found her in the spare bedroom upstairs. She wasn't dead yet,
One of her eyes was missing, and her hair was wet, full of these little white shards. Her hair was dark like mine, almost black, so I didn't know it was covered in blood until I touched it, and my hand came away red. I didn't know the little white shards were fragments of her own skull. She was gaping at me, her mouth opening and closing like a fish. I was six, so I didn't really know what had happened. I saw the gun on the floor. It was half under the bed, and she was reaching for it, hand clasping and unclasping. She was making these awful, wet, gurgling noises. I started crying, because I knew she was going to die. She was crying too, but she was crying tears of blood, and I didn't know what the fuck to do. So I tried to leave the spare room to get to the phone, but... He swallows, then exhales a steady, long breath. This is soul-destroying. This is the most terrible thing I have ever heard, and I wasn't even there. 6-year-old Alex was, though. I rub the heel of my hand into the center of my chest, as if the physical action will ease the emotional pain I'm feeling. Alex, you really don't need to... She grabbed hold of my ankle, wouldn't let me go. She was so fucked up, but it was surprising how tight she held onto me then. I turned her onto her back, and that's when I saw that most of the left side of her jaw was missing. She couldn't speak. She tried, he says, nodding. But she couldn't. So she told me what she wanted by pointing at the gun. I didn't want to give it to her, but I could see that she was in so much pain, and I didn't know what else to do. So I got it for her. I gave it to her. I did. I cover my mouth with my hands, my eyes burning like crazy. I'm too scared to breathe for fear that I'll end up bursting into tears. Alex looks at me, looks hard. Doesn't waver. She couldn't close her hand around the handle. She kept on trying, and she kept on dropping it. In the end, she started this awful wailing. I'd never heard anything like it before. She was suffering. She wanted to go, and she couldn't fucking do it. And I knew what was going to happen next, but... Oh, Alex. The gun was fucking huge. I think it was a Desert Eagle or something. Must have been to blow half her face off like that. But I wasn't really looking at it properly. At the time, all I knew was that it was heavy, and I couldn't hold it straight, not even with both hands. She helped me. She guided it to her other temple, the one she hadn't already ruined. She closed her eyes, sighed, and it was like this wash of relief came over her. She nodded, squeezing her hand around the top of my thigh, digging her fingernails into my leg. And then I remember her jerking, the sound of the gun firing, the small room filling up with this horrible smelling smoke, and there being blood running down the wall. And that was it. I called 911, told them what had happened. There was a second there where they thought I just straight up fucking killed her. Took 2 days for the coroner to confirm that my story was probably the truth. They kept me in a psych ward, locked inside this room with 3 fully grown crazy motherfuckers who kept trying to touch me. And then it was the system. Foster care. Bumped from home to home. His skin had taken on this deathly hue, like a part of him has just died in the retelling of this dark, fucked up story. If I'd come home earlier, I probably could have stopped her. It wasn't your fault, Alex. None of it. He looks down at the food in front of him, then back up at me again. He shifts a little, laying his hands flat against the top of the table. I don't think he knows what to do with them. You're right. I know, he says. She did it to herself. Even in the end, she managed to pull the trigger. But I held it for her, Silver. I fucking held it.
20. Alex. I run the St. Christopher medallion along the chain around my neck on the drive back to the cabin, tearing myself a new one. Way to ruin lunch, you fucking asshole. Nothing like a good old gory suicide to really whet a girl's appetite. Beside me, Silver sits in silence, 2 to-go boxes full of cold food resting on her lap. I think she's fucking traumatized. I was traumatized as fuck for a seriously long time after that happened to me. But I've had the benefit of 11 years, and a whole heap of estate-ordered therapy since then. I don't like to think about it. I sure as fuck don't like to talk about it, but I can if I really feel the need to.
Once we're back, Silver puts our abandoned food into the fridge for later and goes upstairs. When she comes back down, she has her guitar in her hand. She opens up the doors that lead onto the lower deck, letting the cold air inside, and goes to sit in a weathered old chair by the railing. She doesn't say anything as she begins to play. The melody is haunting and soft, filled with a sadness that makes my throat ache. She's seriously fucking talented. Her finger-picking skills are on fucking point. I sit myself down on the deck, back resting against a wooden post, watching her hand slide deftly up and down the instrument. I'm still only wearing a t-shirt, and the cold knifes through the material, but I barely feel it. I'm too sucked into the music that spills from her like a tortured confession of her own. To the right of the deck, the lake lies as still and flat as a mirror, reflecting the gunmetal gray of the sky, as well as the brace of trees that venture all the way down to the shoreline, their exposed roots knotty and tangled, dipping into the water. Time slows as Silver plays. She doesn't even seem to be paying attention to what she's doing, her fingers flying nimbly up and down the neck of the guitar. It's quite something to watch. When she finally stops, her hands falling still, I get to my feet and take the guitar from her. I'll admit, smug bastard that I am, that I'm pleased by the look of shock on her face when I begin to play, mimicking the melody, pitch, and pace of the song she was just playing herself. "You motherfucker," she says, a small smile spreading across her face. "I suppose this is what you meant. When I asked what you were planning to do when the end-of-year music exam rolled around, you said you had it covered." "Were you picturing bribery?" I ask quietly, still playing her tune from memory. "Something like that." She chews on her thumbnail, her eyes following me as I pace up and down the deck, head bowed, expanding now on what she played, throwing my own twist on it, adding my own sorrow into the mix. That's what this song is, after all. A haunting, beautiful, painful lament. When I'm finished, I sit on the deck again, Indian style, laying the guitar flat over my legs so it doesn't get scratched. "I want to tell you what happened to me," Silver says. "But I worry."
"What are you worried about?"
"That you'll hear of all the gruesome, messed up details and you won't be attracted to me anymore. You'll feel sorry for me instead, and I don't want that."
"I can guarantee you there is nothing in this world that could ever make me unattracted to you, Silver. And I'll be sorry that something so fucking horrible happened to you, but I won't pity you. You're too strong to deserve anybody's pity. What else?"
"I'm worried you'll do something stupid. You said something pretty disturbing in the cafe. You said you were gonna hurt them, and you didn't say you wouldn't do anything to them after that."
"This is a tough one. I didn't take back that comment because I don't plan on lying to you, ever. And I will hurt them for what they did to you. Do you think they deserve to walk around free after causing so much pain? Do you think they won't do it again to someone else if they're left unchecked?" She looks doubtful.
"You forget I heard that conversation outside Darhauer's office. You're on your final warning. If you do anything illegal, you're gonna end up in jail. And that's not something I can live with. Not for me. Plus, if you use violence against them the way they used it against me, then how does that make you any better than them?"
Drumming my fingers against the top of her guitar, I consider this. The solution I come up with doesn't make me happy, but it's something at least. "What if I don't do anything illegal? Or use violence?"
"How could you possibly avoid it?"
"I'm a resourceful guy. If I have to, I'll make it work."
"I don't want to testify," she says miserably. "I can't face that. My parents wouldn't be able to live with themselves if they knew."
"They don't know any of it?"
"You don't understand. It's not as simple as just telling them something bad happened to me. They had me so young. They're good parents, but they have so much going on, Alex. They both work like crazy, and Max needs all of their focus. He's just a kid. If I tell them this, he'll fall by the wayside. Everything will be about me. Their lives will stop. I can't do that to them. I can't do that to Max."
I can see how she'd think that, but her perspective is so warped. They're your parents, Argento. When they eventually do find out about this, they're going to be so fucked up. They're going to be devastated that you didn't trust them to have your back. She looks away, out over the lake. Clearly, she doesn't want to hear this. She wants me to just understand and accept that she's made the right decision. I'm not going to get her to change her mind, so instead, I press for the offer I just made her. How about it? All above board, a legal takedown, not a single drop of blood shed in the pursuit of justice.
And no testifying on my part.
I sigh. Fine, no testifying on your part. She waits, considering my proposal, her eyes searching the calm water. Come on, don't you want a little payback? Just a little revenge for everything they put you through.
Of course I do.
Well?
Okay. If you think it's possible to accomplish that within those parameters, then you have my blessing. Do whatever you want. I'll give you a blow-by-blow account of what went down that night. But I'm not as brave as you, Alex. I don't think I can get through it if I have to say it out loud. I'll write it down. But you have to swear you'll burn it once you've read it. You have to fucking promise me, Alex, and you can't treat me any differently afterward.
Mr. Elliot, my old therapist, would have balked at this deal. He would have said it would be better for her to say it out loud, that there would be some sort of catharsis to be had that way. But shit, who am I to argue with her? If this is the way it's gotta be, then this is the way it's gotta be. I give her a three-fingered salute. Scout's honor. I love a good fire. You have my word.
21. Silver. We spend the rest of the day watching movies and talking. We pretend like Alex didn't tell me the story of his mother's botched suicide, and I haven't agreed to write a fucked up essay on that one time when I got sexually assaulted. He tells me more about his brother, about how he and Ben were placed in a couple of homes together in the beginning, but that they kept getting separated over and over again when Alex began to act out and made life difficult for their foster parents. He's angry when he tells me about the woman who's looking after Ben now, a legal secretary over in Bellingham called Jackie. She makes it hard for him to see his brother, switching up his visitation days, snooping into his business, reporting him to CPS whenever he puts a wrong foot. That woman's tried to have me incarcerated more times than I can count, he says. We're sitting on the couch. My legs are over his, covered by a blanket, and he's running his fingers up and down the soles of my bare feet, smirking every time he hits a ticklish spot, and I twitch. I deserved it back in the beginning. I was an asshole. I did plenty of shit to warrant the 10 million phone calls she put in with the cops. He lets his head fall back against the sofa cushions. I set her trash cans on fire once. I also stole her cat.
You stole her cat?
Ben's allergic. His eyes were all itchy and red every time I saw him. He'd be covered in hives, and Jackie didn't seem to give a shit. For years, she and I were locked in the shitty war of attrition, neither of us backing down, neither of us giving any ground. And then I realized I was the problem. I had to make some changes. Since then, Mother Teresa wouldn't have had shit on me, but Jackie's still trying to shut me out. It's been 2 years since I started playing nice, and Jackie'd still have me banished to fucking Alaska if she could.
I want to touch him. It's becoming more and more normal to reach out for him. We've spent the day trading casual, fleeting moments of physical contact, but I'm still nervous as hell when I slide my hand under the blanket and find his arm. His skin is smooth and hot to the touch. My fingertips buzz as I trail them up over his bicep, slipping beneath the sleeve of his t-shirt, until I hit the top of his shoulder. We're both vibrating with this frenetic kind of electricity. Alex looks like he's forgotten all about Jackie. He's staring down at his shoulder, at the point where my fingers are drawing small circles into his skin, and he's as tense as can be. Slowly, with heavy, hazy eyes, he looks up at me. And suddenly, all I want to do is slide over, straddle him, and rip off the shirt I'm wearing. He has a hungry predator's eyes, dark eyes that make promises and cut down to the quick. He's unflinching. When Alex Moretti looks at you, you feel your soul laid bare, and it's the most disturbing, thrilling thing I've ever experienced. Right now, he's looking at me like he wants to eat me. I draw my hand out from underneath the blankets, face heated, fire singing in my veins. It's unspoken between us. After everything that happened, I can't be rushed into anything. I'm shocked by how easy this is with him, though. How much I want it. Want him. You say you've been on best behavior. But that isn't true, is it? I whisper. His gaze is still so unfocused. I've become so used to deadpan Alex at school that I've learned the language of him now. I can recognize and decode even the smallest facial movement, the tiniest little twitch. But here, alone with him, Alex isn't the guarded, hyper-careful version of himself that I'm so used to. He's let down a considerable number of his walls, and seeing so much of what he's thinking and feeling on his face is making me a little dizzy. He picks up my hand and lifts it to his mouth, softly placing a kiss against the inside of my wrist.
"And why would you say that?"
he asks. Hard to think with his lips brushing over such sensitive skin. "You did something before you came to Raleigh. Must have been pretty bad to get you kicked out of Bellingham and nearly carted off to prison." He smiles against my wrist.
"Just ask, Argento. I thought we were done with the pussyfooting around."
"Okay, then. What was it? What did you do that got you into so much trouble?" He groans, smiling awkwardly, slumping back into the couch. He's suddenly very interested in the fringe trim on the ancient cushion beside him. He tugs at it, clearing his throat.
"Well, the last time I got separated from Ben, I was sent to live with this guy, Gary. He was a parole officer, and he fucking hated me. Told me he only took me in because he was sick of watching little punks like me get away with blue murder, and I was going to have some sense knocked into me if it was the last thing he did. And boy, did he like knocking sense into me."
It's far too late for the dread that writhes in my gut, urging me to do something, to help him. This has all taken place already, but I feel it just the same. "He hurt you?" Alex grunts, eyes blank, fixed on the fire that's burning in the grate on the other side of the room.
"I left a dish in the sink. I earned myself a swift right hook. I came back too late. I got a steel toe cap to the ribs. I played guitar too loud. I got 3 of my fingers broken."
"He broke your fingers?" Of all the terrible things that happened to him, this to me is the worst. Stealing a musician's ability to play is tantamount to stealing away their soul. Alex holds up his hand, the one with the rose inked into the back of it, and wiggles his fingers.
"Middle, ring, and pinky," he informs me. "Bastard held me down and pinned me to the side of his truck, then slammed the door on them repeatedly until I started fucking screaming. I was 12.
"God, Alex."
"I was lucky, really."
He closes his hand into a tight fist, shoving it back underneath the blanket.
"They healed up straight. No real long-term damage done. They ache when it's cold and I'm on the bike sometimes, but..."
He shrugs.
"Gary was trying to crush my hand. If he'd fucked up the bones and the tendons there, I never would have played again."
"What happened then? How did you end up getting away from him?"
Alex smirks. "Puberty. I got big, and I got big quick. Fucker was content wailing on me when I was a scrawny little shit with Popeye muscles, but I started bulking out when I was 14, way quicker than any of the other kids in my year. I was 15 when I started hitting back. And Gary, boy, Gary did not like that. Took him a while to give in, mind you. He spent a year trying to get the upper hand on me. He'd wait until I was asleep in the basement, and then he'd creep down there and start laying into me while I was unconscious. Fractured my jaw once. Eventually, that was the only way he could best me, so I just stopped sleeping. I used to lie there on the mattress, faking it, willing him to come sneaking down those fucking stairs so I could surprise the motherfucker and knock a couple of his teeth out. One night, he started wailing on me with this crowbar, and I fucking lost it. I took it from him and started in on him with it. Next thing I know, the cops are dragging me off, and Gary's being fawned over in the hospital. Poor, saintly, selfless member of the community that he was. I was put before a judge. Told me I had to spend the summer break in juvie and do 6 months community service after that. Once I got out of juvie, I was expecting to be sent to another shitty foster home. But that's when Monty showed up."
"Monty? I haven't heard him mention the name before." Alex nods.
"Montgomery Richard Cohen III. He owns The Rock. He was friends with my dad back in the day.
He read about me beating the shit out of Gary in the Hoquiam Gazette and petitioned the county clerk's office to take me once I was released.
Wow.
Yeah. Said he owed my father a debt, and he supposed it had been paid now.
So you went to live with him?
Only for a few months. The county did a couple of random drive-bys to make sure I was behaving myself and sleeping where I was supposed to be sleeping. Once they signed off on all my paperwork, Monty gave me the keys to my place now, and I've been living there ever since.
At the Salt and Ash Park?
You missed a word out of the title, Silver, he says ruefully. The Salt and Ash Trailer Park. I'm not ashamed. No need to skirt around it.
A prickle of shame bites at me, making my cheeks burn, because that's precisely what I did do. Sorry, I don't even know why I did that. He gives me a slow, almost sad smile.
Sure you do. You live in a big house with a wraparound porch and a manicured lawn out front. You have both your parents. You get to scream at your brother every morning because his bedroom is the room next to yours, and he's annoying the shit out of you. Whereas I live alone in a double-wide on a gravel plot, and I have to fight for the chance to spend enough time with my brother that he might get the chance to annoy me.
I slump against the cushion, feeling like a grade-A asshole. You're right, I murmur.
Don't apologize. I'm not sorry. I have freedom now. I can go where I want, do what I want, be who I want. And believe me, my place right now is a dramatic step up from Gary's basement. Which brings me back to my morose story. I always planned to pay Gary a visit, to let him know how much I appreciated his care and attention one last time, but I got caught up working for Monty and trying to settle back in at Bellingham, and time kind of got away from me. And then one morning, Monty chucks the newspaper at me, and there it is on the front page. He holds up his hands, framing the imaginary headline. Officer Feldman, dedicated civil servant of Grays Harbor County, killed following denied parole appeal hearing. He'd been escorting someone from the courthouse when a group of guys in ski masks jumped out of a van and shot him in the chest, killed instantly. They were rescuing their buddy. As far as I know, they got away with it too. Ironically, Gary was buried in the cemetery on the far side of this lake. When he got out of the hospital after the beating I gave him, the fucker went to the detention center where I was being held and told them I'd stolen a piece of his jewelry. They let him rifle through my shit, and he took the only thing he knew mattered to me.
Which was? He tugs down the neck of his t-shirt, closing his hand around the small golden medallion hanging around his throat.
My mom's St. Christopher. Gary knew I never took it off, but that I would have had to surrender it at the center, so he took it to hurt me. Then he died, and I was determined to get it back. I went to his place and tossed it, but it wasn't there. I knew the asshole wouldn't have sold it or given it away. It was the one thing he had over me, and I knew for a fact the sick fuck would have coveted it because of what it meant to me. So I went and dug him up. And lo and behold, there it was, clasped tight in his greedy, dead little hand. A cop found me pissing on him and tased me. And that is how I ended up at Raleigh, hanging onto my freedom by the skin of my teeth.
Jesus, Alex. Hesitantly, I touch my fingers to the fine chain where it falls across the back of his neck. I've noticed him toying with it many times since he started at Raleigh, but I haven't realized how significant it is until now. How important. I don't blame you for doing any of that, I tell him. I would have done the same thing.
He doesn't say anything to that.
The light from the fire dances across his face, and I can't help myself. I release the chain, my hand rising up the back of his neck, a wild shiver of nerves and anticipation flying up and down my back as I brush my fingers over the closely cropped hair at the base of his skull. High, and a little higher still, and then my hand is buried in longer, wavy hair. I wind my fingers through it, curling the length of it around them, almost massaging his head. And slowly, Alex closes his eyes.
Dolcezza,
he whispers.
Non fermarti.
My heart trips over itself, stuttering frantically to find its lost rhythm. You called me that earlier. What does it mean?
Dolcezza.
Alex's voice is rough-edged and low.
Sweetness,
he murmurs. A rush of adrenaline slams into me, pooling in the pit of my stomach. Sweetness.
I am his sweetness. Fuck. And the other part? I ask. His eyes still closed, his face in profile, his features cast in gold by the fire. Alex looks like some kind of mythical god. His chest rises abruptly, and he lets out a pained groan.
It means, don't stop.
He moves so quickly, I barely have time to yelp as his eyes fly open and he twists, grabbing me by the waist, lifting me from the sofa in a swift, effortless maneuver that makes me feel as though I weigh nothing at all. His hands are firm, guiding me, and all of a sudden, I'm exactly where I wanted to be 5 minutes ago. Legs either side of him, straddling him, my chest crushed up against him as his hands press urgently against my back. He shifts down a little, sliding down the sofa, and I feel him between my legs, his dick rock solid and hard enough to dig into the underside of my thigh. For one long, paralyzing moment, I think I'm going to punch him in the throat in an attempt to flee the situation. My head, fuck, my mind is roaring. I can't fucking... Alex takes my hands and places them on either side of his throat, holding his own hands over mine, drawing me down closer to him. I can feel his pulse hammering frantically beneath my palms.
Shh. It's fine. It's okay, Silver. I'm not going to hurt you. I'm not even going to touch you. Relax.
Okay. I nod up and down, breathing in through my nose. Okay. By the third okay, the surge of panic that rose up and closed around my throat is dissipating.
I'm never going to do anything without your permission, he says, in that low, ragged voice. I just wanted you here, against me, your body against mine. I wanted you fucking closer, Silver. Your hands in my hair like that.
He doesn't finish. I don't think he can. Taking my time, along with a second to catch my breath, I slide my hands out from under his and gingerly brush the tips of my fingers down the side of his face. It felt good, I whisper. His eyes are bottomless and fierce in the almost dark room.
Beyond good, he grinds out. Your hands, anywhere, on me feel good. But that,
he shakes his head like he's trying to clear his addled mind.
No one's touched me like that before.
I see the truth in his eyes. I'm no fucking fool. Alex doesn't carry himself like a guy who's inexperienced with women. I've heard of the Rockwell, and I know of its unsavory reputation. There's no doubt in my mind that Alex hasn't been a virgin for a very, very long time. But to have him tell me that I'm the first person to touch him in such a simple, intimate way like that, rubbing his head? I had no idea I could be any sort of first for him, and that feels fucking incredible. With one hand, I tentatively begin to repeat the motion, weaving my fingers into the thickness of his hair, pressing the tips of my fingers into his scalp, biting my bottom lip between my teeth when he shudders beneath me. He rests his hands at my hips, but I'm unafraid of the contact. I'm fascinated by the way he's looking up at me, eyes burning, jaw set, head angled back a little, exposing the column of his throat as he leans into my touch.
Stop biting your lip, he grinds out roughly.
Why? God, my own voice has its own uneven step to it, too.
Because it's driving me fucking crazy, he says.
Now, Mr. Moretti, patience is king.
I'm patient. For you, I'll be eternally patient. Doesn't mean watching you bite that lip isn't the most torturous thing I've ever fucking seen.
I'm pleased, though I try not to be. Being pleased means I'm enjoying the fact that I can turn him on so easily. And that's dangerous. When Alex shifts underneath me again, my reaction is immediate and unintentional, though. I press my hips down, rolling them once against him, and Alex goes absolutely, utterly, terrifyingly still. No sound comes out of his mouth, but I can read the word he mouths perfectly well on his lips.
Fuck.
A tendon strains in his neck, the muscles in his chest tensed beneath his t-shirt as he tightens beneath me. I'm burning up. My face must be bright red from my jawline to my hairline. I feel alive in a dangerous, reckless, insane kind of way, and for the first time since Leon Wickman's spring fling party, I also feel a little powerful. Like in that slight, barely there movement just now, I regained a scrap of the power that was stolen from me. The first time I rocked myself against him might have been an accident, but the second time I do it, shit, I don't know what possesses me, but the second time I do it on purpose. A flare of pleasure, intense and a little bewildering, sparks between my legs as I roll my hips again, and Alex's fingers dig into my sides, gouging into my hips, through my jeans. Jesus fucking Christ, Silver, he pants. In 2 seconds flat, I'm off his lap, on my back, the sofa underneath me, and Alex is hovering over me, holding his weight off me, his mouth less than an inch from mine. If I kiss you now, I'm going to try and fucking consume you, he rasps. It won't be a little sip. It won't be fucking controlled. I take hold of the bottom of his t-shirt, not knowing what the fuck to do, if I want to tear through the thin material or just have done with it and rip the damn thing over his head. Do it, I pant. It'll be okay. I think I'll be okay. A brief flicker of hesitation flashes in his eyes, but it's gone before it even really forms. Gritting his teeth, a guttural, pained sound works free from the back of his throat. No. He shoves away from me, throwing himself back toward the other end of the couch. Then he groans again, running his hands through his hair, tugging on it hard. We should be smart. We should wait, he says breathlessly. Oh my fucking God. Silver Parisi, what the fuck is wrong with you? I am the one who was assaulted, beaten, and humiliated, and yet it's me trying to rush into things now? Shit, I'm sorry. I'm really sorry, Alex. He sits there with his hands still buried in his hair. Then he falls slack, sinking back against the couch. His hands drop to his sides. Then he glances at me out of the corner of his eye. It's okay. It's not a big deal. But you're a guy, I say, wincing. That kind of shit really is torture for you. Doesn't it cause serious internal damage or something if you get turned on and then you can't do anything about it? Alex doesn't react to this statement the way I expect him to. He twists around quickly, facing me, grabbing hold of my hand. You know what that is, Silver? He growls. That is a lie told by pieces of shit who'll say anything to get what they want. A fucking lie. There wouldn't be a man left alive if that were true. I'm pretty sure every single adolescent guy in the world gets a boner on the bus on the way to fucking school each morning. We're not out there yelling at the driver, calling them a prick tease because the vibrations from their fucking bus made our dicks hard. We're not being carted off to hospital because we couldn't have a moment to stroke our dicks and our balls fucking exploded. It's part of being a fucking guy. We get turned on. Nothing comes of it. We all move on. End of story. Any guy who tells you otherwise is probably going to end up using that bullshit as an excuse for raping someone down the line.
Oh.
Did he say that to you? Alex snarls. Is that the fucking line he pulled?
No. My chest is so tight it hurts. That night in Leon's bathroom tries to rear its ugly head. The ugly memories try to surface, to command my attention, to take control and hurt me. I don't want to remember, though. I am so sick of fucking remembering. I'm done with being held prisoner by that night. All I want to do is be here with Alex, to feel like I felt a moment ago when I had my legs wrapped around him and I felt like I was in charge of my own actions. I cover my eyes, forcing the images and that all too familiar fear back down into the basement of my soul.
Sorry, Alex says softly. I shouldn't have asked that.
It's okay. I can't find a way to tell him how I'm feeling right now, or what I want. Frustration wells up inside me, tightening like a collar around my neck, suffocating me, and I know I'm on the verge of snapping. Normally, I'd retreat into myself at this point, shut down and hide. I don't want to be that version of myself anymore, though. If I ever want to overcome this instead of it overcoming me all the time, then I have to change the way I've been doing things. Because obviously the old way hasn't been working. I'm shaking, nervous as hell as I get up off the couch. Alex frowns. He cracks his thumb knuckle, his jaw working like he's angry at himself.
You want me to leave? He asks quietly.
No, just stay right where you are. I feel ridiculous and inexperienced as I take my shirt by the hem and slowly pull it over my head. I stand there for a second, stiff, the shirt dangling from my hand, watching Alex, trying to gauge his reaction. A fierce, tight look forms on his face. His posture's rigid, awkward, his torso twisted a little from where he was turning to look at me a second ago, but he doesn't move an inch. It's as if he physically can't move. Dropping my shirt, I move on to my jeans, unfastening them, and slowly, carefully sliding them down my legs. God, I want to be better at this for him. Confident and sure of myself. Casey used to put on a show in her bedroom all the time, demonstrating the provocative striptease she'd performed for Leon the night before. And this, what I'm doing right now, this is nothing like that. This is a simple, careful, shy undressing. And I feel like a fucking fool.
Silver. Alex's voice is a coarse, uneven whisper. What are you doing?
I step out of my jeans, rolling back my shoulders, convincing myself to stand tall, even though I'm wearing nothing but my underwear. If I were Casey, I would have been sporting a skimpy matching lingerie set. I wasn't exactly planning this, though. My bra is white and lacy, my panties a pale baby pink, plain and simple. The garments are pretty, and I feel good in them, but they're definitely not doing anything to make me look less innocent. I want this, I say softly. I want you to see me.
Silver, we have so much time. There's no need.
I reach around my back, unhooking the catch on my bra strap. I'm a ball of insecurity as I slowly slip the straps over my shoulders, letting them fall down my arms.
Do it, Silver. Just fucking do it.
I need a few deep breaths before I lower my arms, allowing the front of the bra to fall away to the floor. My chest bare, breasts exposed, I stand, letting myself get used to the idea that I'm nearly naked. Alex's eyes don't waver from my face, not even for a split second. I wait for his gaze to dip, to look down, but they don't.
What happened to patience?
He rasps. I take another deep breath and finish the job, hooking the material of my panties at my hips and sliding them down. I've laid myself bare, and now I'm bathed in heat, bashful and slightly embarrassed, but also thrilled by what I've just done. I took control. I was brave. I realize I was unafraid, and that is a monumental step. Fuck patience, I say. I don't want to wait. I want to be normal. I want to feel you inside. Far too quickly, Alex looks away, his head whipping around so that he's looking out of the window. He's frowning deeply, expression stormy, his dark eyes hard. And I'm struck with the awful realization that he might not actually want this. Oh, fuck. Have I just stripped out of my clothes like some stupid, naive little girl, assuming he'll want me, when he's not actually attracted to me like that at all? No, that's just my paranoia talking. I know he wants me. I've felt him hard against me more than once now. He nearly just lost his shit when